Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Kicking off your happy hour. Getting your weekend going in the right direction. That's right, to my radio listeners out there. The views of this host and this show certainly do not reflect the views of much of what you will find on this radio station, that's for sure. Got a really good show coming up for you here this time around. I've been talking about it for a while. We are chatting with Sue Strachan, who is a terrific author, veteran journalist, who's covered a lot of culture stuff and many, many other things here in the New Orleans area. And she recently put out a book on LSU Press called The Cafe Brulo, which is a very famous drink cocktail that, although it's not originally from New Orleans, almost certainly, as we were saying, I say in my show notes, other things, we've certainly made it our own here. And we are over at the famed French Quarter restaurant Arnaud's talking about the drink. It's really interesting history, most likely coming from France, how it came to be, how it came to find a home here. We get a demonstration. We'll have some multimedia going for you to check out. I'm still working on some of that as I'm recording this. We'll have at least some photos, maybe a little bit of video where we can see a demonstration from Augie, one of the maitre d's there at Arnaud's, showing us how to make a cafe brulo. And you're going, well, really, how to make cafe brulo? How hard can it be? Yeah, fire. Yeah, absolutely. It involves open flame to really do it right, at least the way they do it at Arnaud's. It's a coffee-based drink, and it's got a really, really fascinating story. And where you'll find it most often is in some of the so-called old line or grand dame restaurants, the old school, the generational restaurants here in New Orleans. And they've all got a little bit of a variation in how they do it and exactly what their recipe is. So we talk about that, but it's a really terrific book that Sue has put out, again, called The Cafe Brulo. And of course, one of the things we let you know is how you can find said book. Some of the brick and mortars around New Orleans have it. Go out and buy it there if you can. If you must buy it online, certainly you can find it on Amazon. But we're going to get all that from Sue during the conversation. And a special thanks to our friends there, Augie and the rest of the gang, Christophe, who runs the bar, French 75 Bar, for hosting us at the restaurant. It was a really lovely afternoon. Next time around, we're going to take actually a planned week off from doing the show, and then we're going to be back chatting with Bart Watson, who is the chief economist from the Brewers Association. I've been talking about that for a while. They are about to release their 2021 data on the beer industry in the United States. They focus particularly on the craft beer industry, but obviously a lot of implications for the broader beer industry, and they look at the whole thing. So it's always a really interesting time because they do a tremendous job compiling data, looking at trends, looking at on-premise, meaning when you get, in this case, beers, drink them like in a bar or at a brewery or off-premise when you buy it at a store, and they look at all kinds of, a whole host of other things and data. And Bart's a really great guest, great guy to talk to, super knowledgeable about the world of beer and beer economy. So we're looking forward to having him on. We usually have him on once or twice a year, and certainly bringing the annual wrap up is one of the times we like to do that. So we're going to be looking at 2021 with him. We're still working on getting our buddy David Wondrich on the show. He's a busy man, but we've been bouncing back and forth trying to find some dates, and we're going to have a whole host of other things coming up. If you're a radio listener, thank you very much. Go to noladrinks.com, get the podcast, because you'll hear our podcast only extended version, our conversation, in this case, obviously, with Sue. Another Shot with NOLA Drinks is what we call it. Sue's going to stick around with us for that. Again, go to noladrinks.com. And I'll talk a little bit about Bourbon Fest and some other things. We didn't end up with any stuff out of Bourbon Fest. I was talking about that a ton, right? Well, I'll share the story in our podcast only segment when we close out the show. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and we're going to be back, chatting with Sue Strachan, author of The Cafe Brulo over at Arnaud's. Come on back.
I'm Liz Williams, host of Tip of the Tongue on the Nitty Grits Podcast Network. Join me and weekly guests for conversations about food and drink and the people who create food culture around the world. The show is for the curious, hungry for food knowledge. My new book, Nonna's Creole Italian Table, about the Sicilian community in New Orleans, can be pre-ordered from Amazon. Learn more about Nitty Grit's podcast network at southernfood.org.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have you here as always. Hey, we're at one of the most famous restaurants in all of New Orleans, in all of the world. We are here at Arno's, as you know, and we are talking with author Sue Strachan about her fabulous new book, The Cafe Brulo. Sue, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a thrill to see you, meet you in person finally.
Yeah.
I know your voice. I know you on Instagram. It's just so great to, you know, meet you in person.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. Yeah, it's great to meet you in person as well, and really happy to have you here. We had to we did some jumping around, moving around, trying to figure out how to make all this work, and thanks to our friends here at Arno's for being kind enough to host us.
Completely love Katie Kisbarian and her family, and you know, they've been longtime owners of this fabulous restaurant.
Yeah. And we need places like this. And I don't want to get too off topic, but one of the things, you know, you describe to people, or we talk about, say, maybe other cities where the business model is the restaurant comes and goes in 5 years and that's the plan. That's not what we do here in New Orleans, especially in a place like this. We're talking about generational, decadal long stuff. And this is, it's part of our lifeblood. It's part of our culture, isn't it?
It really is. And it's so unique to New Orleans, in my opinion. I haven't been to every city in the U.S., but I do know I've been to a few major ones. And I think this is pretty much the only city in the U.S. that has such, you know, old school, old line restaurants that have been family owned, or if not family owned, at least a sort of a long ownership and owned by locals. And, you know, it's Arno's, you have Antoine's, you have Galatoire's, you have Broussard's, you have Brennan's, Commander's Palace.
Yep.
Who have, you know, as I said, either family owned continuously or have stayed in local ownership.
Yeah, maybe two, three families over the course of,
yes.
We're not talking 10 years or 20 years, we're talking 100 plus years,
like we
are here in Arno's, absolutely. So, Sue, you've written a really cool book about a very famous, easy for me to say, New Orleans cocktail, the Cafe Brulo. And it's a really interesting story and a murky past, like a lot of cocktails here in New Orleans.
Of course.
But before we get into what the drink is, anytime you're writing about a cocktail that was invented some decades ago, it's a challenge. So what prompted you to take that challenge to do this and this drink?
Well, I'll start from the beginning. LSU Press, Louisiana State University Press, approached me about writing a book as part of their iconic New Orleans cocktail series. And Tim McNally had already written the Sazerac, and they were ready for number two. And they approached me and like, here's a list of cocktails. And I leaped at doing a Cafe Brulo. Because it's such a new, to in my opinion, when I took the assignment, it still is a New Orleans drink. It's a New Orleans tradition, and it's a great way to end a meal. It's so celebratory, and if you have friends in from out of town, it's, you know, it's a big surprise, and they all go ooh with the fire and the smell, and you know the special service that's done to create it. And so I left it the chance to do it. But as you say, the murky past, it was interesting once I started diving into it and doing more research that, you know, some of the things that you read about it, you know, supposedly invented by Jean Lafitte, or it technically wasn't really invented, maybe not at Antoine's. So,
right.
It was, you know, a detective story and research during the pandemic. And so it was made, you know, the research even harder. And we, you know, I was lucky to have some friends in the liquor industry. You know, once I, you know, and friends who are also writers who said to me, well, you know, I heard somewhere along the line that there's actually a link to Armagnac in France, in Southwest France. And so I pursued that via email and found out that there's a good chance that the real true origins of, or at least the Brulo part of it, is in Armagnac, France. So, you know, I went from there, and they, you know, Amanda Garham, I had, you know, kudos to her for sending me some great information that's in the book.
And she's, and where is she, and who is
she?
She's
in France. Amanda Garham represents, one of the clients she represents is in the Armagnac, the brandy, and it is the oldest brandy. In France, older than Cognac, older than quote-unquote brandy.
Right.
And so she was the one who was like, of course, you know, Armagnac, you know, this is what, you know, this is, you know, this is what they, the distillers make after their first distillation, they do a little mixture together, which they call a brulo. So if you make them
high proof, it's the tails, right, coming mm-hmm, off, and mm-hmm, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you think about it, most of these old line restaurant owners came from France, and particularly Southwest France. Antoine Alciatar, who founded Antoine's, born in Italy, grew up in Marseille, which is a little east, but I'm sure he encountered the Armagnac Brulot. And then you have Jean Galatois, who was born in the Gascony, in Armagnac region, where Armagnac is produced.
Right.
And then Arnaud Cazeneuve, who is the founder, or Count Arnaud, people don't know. They think he's American. Well, he's born in France, and
right,
he immigrated here.
Right.
So it's all real interesting sort of, you know, mixture of people who probably encountered it in their youth and younger, you know, maybe brought it over. But from what I understand, it was Jules Alciatar, Antoine's son, who kicked off the whole thing. And if you know anything about Jules, he's a marketing genius of creating. He also invented Oysters Rockefeller,
right,
Eggs Sardou.
Right. Yep.
But he invented the American version or the New Orleans version of Café Brûlot.
Right.
So we're
not going to go into the history of the term cocktail. You cover that really nicely in your book. We've talked about that on the show before, and kind of murky. But I think I like what you did, because I think that it's not that hard to imagine. You know, people are neighbors. People are fellow restaurant owners. Mm-hmm. People grew up in a certain area. So, you know, it's not that much of a leap of logic to kind of think about it in this microcosmic way that it's invented here and just mm-hmm. came out of nowhere. These things are always sort of, in my view anyway, most of the time, a continuum. And the story, you know, whenever something's attributed to Jean Lafitte, I always doubt the story.
You know, people love to tell the story, and you know, you I don't know if it's still on. I haven't checked recently. It used to be on some of the tourism sites, and you know, I guess everyone thinks a pirate is romantic, but you also have to remember that he also traded in slaves. So
right,
that's for me where the romanticism sort of strictly ends.
Absolutely.
You know, he did help in the war of 1812, and one of the reasons we won, but we can't remember, pirates are pirates.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think there's a lot of attribution to mythology that mm-hmm. wants to say they invented this, did this, forged this, whatever we're talking about. I think the story with Antoine's is a little bit more compelling mm-hmm. and just my humble opinion, without any historical background on this, you know, it would just seem to be that there was exposure to this drink.
Mm-hmm.
And the traditions in France and other things that would just make sense that people had seen this done and then maybe adapted it. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably fair to say.
I would be fair to say that. And I think each restaurant has their own technique. I thought when I was getting recipes for the book from all the old line restaurants that I'm like, oh, it's going to all be the same thing. But they all kind of changed up a little differently, and they all have different presentations of it, too.
That's interesting.
Which is really fun. And, I've promised a few friends when we have time is actually do a Café Brûlot hop through the
crawl.
Ones.
And crawl, I like crawl. That idea.
You're more than welcome to come along through the French Quarter and then maybe take an Uber or Lyft to the Commander's Palace.
That's the only one. We can pretty much walk to the rest, right?
You can walk to the rest.
So let's, we got 6-7 minutes before we're going to take our first break.
Okay.
So let's talk about, just for, you know, we've kind of given a little bit of a background and some context here. What is the Café Brûlot? Let's tell people kind of at its core what the drink is.
All right, you start with brandy and...
So we're starting out strong.
We start out strong with brandy. We have to. It's an alcohol New Orleans drink. And so you start with brandy, and some use cognac. Interestingly, none of the recipes use Armagnac, and I haven't tried one with Armagnac yet, and I would like to. But brandy, and then some recipes call for an orange liqueur. It can be Curacao. It can be triple sec, which I think is garbage. Triple sec.
You know, no, not at all. And actually, you know, triple sec is kind of one of those misunderstood things that it's unfortunately, I think you even kind of touch on this in your book. It's been dumbed down to mm-hmm. be very sugary and very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like for example, Pierre Ferrand's dry Curacao,
yeah,
which fine cognac maker Pierre Ferrand, that's a lovely. I mean, whenever anything calls for anything I don't want to rip on Cointreau or anything. And when anything is called for that calls for Cointreau, Grand Marnier, Triple Sec, my go-to is dry Curacao, which I'm sure would work great in the Brulot.
No, I think it would work well,
but
too.
Anyway, I don't want to get you off topic.
No. That's interesting to learn. I actually, the Altoise was very nice and let me do a taste test of what, and I don't remember the brand of Curacao. Grand Marnier and
Cointreau.
And not Cointreau. They didn't have Cointreau, but I tasted Cointreau elsewhere. And blah, blah, blah. Triple Sec and whatever Triple Sec they had. And if in order of preference, as you said, Triple Sec, it was not great.
Yeah.
And then, you know, next in line, Curacao, which I was fine with. And going Grand Marnier is very smooth and you can almost use it, you know, sip it alone, but it's more expensive than everything else.
Right, exactly.
So in a mixed drink, you know, it's the whole thing about the mixed drink, like how, you know, it's like vodka, and it's like using vodka in a Bloody Mary. Do you want to use the high-end vodka in a Bloody Mary? Because it's all going to be masked out by tomato juice. That's my opinion.
I don't know. I am so absolutely with you. And I told you, Sue, before we came and tape here, full disclosure, I was sitting in the Aaron Rose having a drink before we taped the show, which I sometimes do. And somebody came in and ordered a Bloody Mary. And to their credit, the bartender, Brooke, my friend, said, "What vodka would you like?" And the guests actually came in and said, "I don't care." Which is the smartest answer for a Bloody Mary you could possibly give.
I totally agree.
For God's sakes, don't ask for Tito's.
There's no point.
That's a show for another time. But anyway.
I want to be a guest on that show. Because I have a lot to say about that. But back to the Brulot. So sometimes some don't have the orange liqueur in it. And then sometimes the orange liqueur is replaced by Kirschwasser, which is a cherry brandy liqueur. And I actually prefer with Kirschwasser. You know, I've had to taste test, you know, of all, like I replaced the orange Curacao with the Kirschwasser, and I really like the Kirschwasser better. And then there is, then you also add cloves, cinnamon sticks, orange slices and lemon slices and sugar. And, but I have to, you know, do a shout out to Arnaud's with their presentation, because they do a really great, and you will see soon, what they do is they kind of peel, they don't peel, they do a spiral of the peel.
Yeah, okay.
Dot it with cloves. They put it on a fork. And after the, well I'm going to have myself, let me jump back a little bit. So that's sure. The base of the ingredients is the brandy, orange Curacao or Kirschwasser, the cinnamon sticks, the cloves, the lemons, the orange, and the sugars. Some people like to mix it and let it sit overnight, kind of marinate. In most restaurants in New Orleans just generally make it, you know, as they go, just depends on the restaurant, and then they light it on fire, and then I'm going to go back to where Arnaud's does the spiral. So, you know, he puts a big old barbecue fork in the orange, it's in it, and the spiral down with the cloves, and then they take the flaming mixture which they've lit on fire, and they pour it down the orange, and so it spirals down the orange. And what happens is it releases the cloves flavor,
the oil from the cloves. Yeah.
Which goes down into the orange. I mean, goes into the orange, in the mixture.
Into the juice.
And, you know, they keep on doing that, and they do that a few more times. And then they pour coffee on it to you know, put the fire out. And then they pour it in these special Brulot cups. They can be, or in a demitasse cup. Mm-hmm. And some places, I just saw someone recently at a restaurant, which I don't know if it was just a one-time thing. They were serving in a regular coffee cup, whereas I was just... No, you have to have the Brulot cup. I'm curious about that. You have to have the demitasse or Brulot. Presentation.
So, and what it reminds me of, Sue, to be honest with you, and we have a lot of time to dig into this. So, with the accoutrements that are used to actually serve it, and maybe some, we'll talk about some of the variations that people do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also to me not a stretch to think about the origins. It's very much how you approach making mulled wine.
Oh wow!
And you know, putting, you know, cloves, citrus. Brandy is often added to mulled wine. So again, that's not a stretch to me to think that people were not widely exposed to the drink, you know, in France and even here, because, you know, making mulled wine goes back quite a ways and it is a pretty common approach to doing something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think, and not to, you know, flog this horse too much, but I think people get a little bit too wrapped up in origin stories We talk about that with the Sazerac. We talk about that with the bitters to a certain degree here in town and elsewhere, that, like, you know, somehow the three wise men show up at your door and you will make the Cafe Brulo, you know, and it comes out of nowhere. And, you know, I think these things are just kind of a continuum. And a lot of that, again, makes sense to me because you're also talking about using brandy and mulled wine in these things. And perhaps, you know, you're also using discarded stuff and things like that. So you put some spices in it and you put some citrus in it because it makes it taste better. And it's ready to go right away. Heated up, nice on a cold day.
Well, it's nice on a cold day, but I love Cafe Brulo any day.
So. There you go. Fair enough. Fair enough. You've written a book, so that's actually absolutely true. Let's do this, Sue. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about the wonderful book, Cafe Brulo. We're going to talk about, Sue started to get into this. We're going to talk a little bit about the way it's served, some of the variations on the recipe. You can also go to our website because we'll have some nice visuals for you to check out, friends. We'll take a break here on the Noel Drake Show. Come on back.
Hey, everybody, Roger here with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Be sure to check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of shows about food, drink, and culture. Visit southernfood.org for more.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thank you for joining us on the Noel Drink Show this week, friends. Happy to have you here and happy to be talking with Sue Strachan, who is the author of the fabulous book, The Cafe Brulo, from LSU Press. And we're talking about the traditional cocktail, which has found its home, as we're talking about, Sue, in New Orleans. You know, we're talking about some of the origins of it, and, you know, it obviously has origins elsewhere. But it's kind of like one of these drinks that we have here where it's been adopted here and it's kind of found a footing here, I think maybe is a good way to say. Let's talk about this. So we talked about Arno's presentation, but we talked about some variation. Let's talk about coffee, because I think we were talking a little bit about how, you know, some of the, how it's presented and maybe where it came from in France, where people would do what they did without coffee being involved. We definitely have coffee involved here when we have it served traditionally in New Orleans.
We do. And I have to thank Kevin Pideau at Coast Roast Coffee for giving me a taste test of different types of coffee. And I'm not a coffee drinker, but I will drink Cafe Brulo and cappuccino, go figure, but I can't do a straight up cup of coffee. So it was kind of like, okay, I'm going into this, you know, for the sake of the book. But he was very generous, and he did a taste test between regular coffee, French dark roast, and coffee and chicory. Now, if you look at the recipes, most use a French dark roast, and he said you need that because you don't want the brandy and the, you know, all the orange liqueur and the cloves and the cinnamon to overwhelm.
Just to run the coffee over. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah.
And so French dark roast, but Arnaud's is the rebel and uses coffee and chicory, which I like because the chicory, believe it, like, people are like, oh, you don't taste it. I'm like, yes, you do taste the chicory.
Oh, who says that?
I've heard people like, what's the difference? I'm like, oh, no. You do taste it, obviously, in a plain, you know, coffee and chicory cup of coffee. But even in the Cafe Brulo, if you do a taste test between with or without the, you know, French dark roast coffee and, you know, coffee and chicory, you do taste the difference. And it's this nice little kick to it, which I like.
Yeah, you get that kind of like earthy kind of baking spice that chicory brings to the table. Yeah. I don't know how people would think even in a Brulo that you wouldn't taste that. That makes no sense.
It makes no sense either. I mean, chicory's, you know, a very strong flavor to it. I don't know if you were going down this road, but, you know, people think, you know, coffee and chicory was born out of the Confederate, you know, when there was a blockade in New Orleans during the Civil War, and there was the Confederates, not the Confederates, the U.S., then the Federal Navy had blockaded the city.
The Port of New Orleans, yeah.
The Port of New Orleans, and, you know, that we had no coffee, and so they were, you know, going to drink, you know, coffee and chicory.
Thin it out with chicory.
Yeah, yeah. Which they did. But I discovered during the research that actually they were drinking coffee and chicory in France around the back in the early 19th century, around Napoleon, because, you know, he had done a blockade and there was no coffee coming in. So what did they use? Chicory.
Yeah.
So again, you know, there's no, as you said, you know, the obsession with the origin story, but, you know, who knows? I mean, it most likely that, you know, the coffee and chicory came over with all the French immigrants, or, you know, the other immigrants from Europe as well, and they're already drinking coffee and chicory. So the evolution to drinking it during the Civil War was, you know, not a big deal unless you were, you know, a hardcore coffee fiend.
Right.
And you really
right.
need your coffee.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting part of the story, too, because, again, like you said, with the origins of chicory and coffee, it's something that's found a home in New Orleans, and you can go into any tourist shop and buy, you know, the French Market coffee and so on and have chicory in it. But, again, yeah, absolutely, it's not something that's original to New Orleans.
It's, you know, and I know that Kevin said he gets his chicory. Oh, I hope I'm saying this. It's from Nebraska. So is where I think most people get their American chicory mm-hmm. right now okay. to use in you know, coffee and whatnot. But it's interesting. I think really the only place you can get coffee and chicory is in New Orleans. I think. I mean,
well, okay. Yeah.
I mean, if you're in a restaurant, you can get it. I'm sure you can get coffee and chicory
yeah.
online and whatnot. But if you want it served in a restaurant, I think it's really only here in probably Nebraska where, you know, it's made.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't think it's a great point. I don't think I've ever, and I've always associated it with here because I don't think I've ever mm-hmm. seen it anywhere else. And mm-hmm. I mean, I remember, you know, coming here as a kid and stuff, and before I moved here, that it was around. And, you know, but then it was sold, like we're talking about, sort of like, you know, sold at Cafe Du Monde with their brand and stuff and things like that. That's out there to do that. So regardless, so we have, you know, chicory in that variation, which is we've solved that mystery. So that's going to bring flavor to the table. We know that. But the coffee thing, everybody, as far as you were calling them, the old line restaurants or the grand dames, as we say sometimes, is everybody here doing it with coffee?
Yes, everyone here does it with coffee.
Okay.
French dark roast. And Arnaud's is the only one that does it with coffee and chicory. Unless someone's changed something recently, but that is what I know.
Fair, as far as what you know.
Yeah.
So part of what you did, Sue, is with your book, which I think is really cool. So you told a lot of the backstory that we've covered. And let's talk about this, actually. So we talked about some of the serving vessels and the presentation. And you were mentioning that, you know, part of this is pomp and circumstance, which is a very important part of the Café Brûlot. We have a high-proof brandy in there, so that allows us to put it on fire. And then you mentioned this, because I always wonder, whenever anybody does a flaming drink, you know, we can easily burn the alcohol off. But I think you told us what the solution is that here, anyway, in New Orleans, then you douse it with coffee because that kills the flame.
Yes, it does. But, you know, the thing, I'll jump to a presentation. Arnaud's doesn't do this, but Antoine's does. And I'm not sure about the other restaurants, to be honest, anymore. But I know Antoine's will do this when it's flaming. You'll see they'll dip it out in the spoon, and they'll put the flaming mixture on the table, and that's always like ooh, an ooh moment. And people
fire.
So people, you know, I originally saw that, I was like, it's gonna burn the tablecloth. And from what I understand, Liz Williams, our friend over yes. at Southern Food and Beverage Museum.
Yeah.
I was going to say SoFab, but I need to say.
We can say SoFab. I say SoFab all
okay,
the time.
Okay, it's
SoFab. Absolutely.
It's so fabulous. And so, boom. And so she was the one who had brought up the fact that the chemical compounds is that you're burning off the alcohol, but it's not carbon-based. The flames will burn carbon. I'm not saying as well as she is, but you know where I'm
with the fumes that are coming off.
Yeah, the fumes are coming off, yeah.
But I think if you let something burn to a certain point, it's going to burn. But yeah, I think with it's the fumes that are burning off the top.
I mean, I wouldn't do it on my best linen tablecloth.
Exactly.
Because I'm sure there's been a few that have been singed during a presentation. But it's you know, that's kind of fun to watch as well. But I think, you know, as I said, Arnaud's doesn't do that. Antoine's does. But I think it's a lot of fun, you know, watching the waiters, specifically in Arnaud's, do the flaming mixture down the oranges. I've seen elsewhere where Charles Carter of Antoine's, one of the longtime waiters there, he'll do this thing with the lemons, and he'll squeeze the lemons and the lemon juice by the fire.
And it gives it that little spark.
You know, that's two different you know, variations. And then, there, you know, the other restaurants do everything kind of in between. So it's always fun to watch. And the other great thing about Café Brûlot, in addition to the presentation, is how it smells. It smells like Christmas to me. The cloves, the cinnamon, it's you can smell it coming, you know, a mile away. And that's what makes it fun too. Now, of course, it smells like Christmas, but you know, you can have Christmas all year round.
Absolutely. I love the smell of clove is great. I know you talk about allspice dram and some of these other things that we find in mm-hmm. tropical cocktails and stuff. And it's really lovely. I find that fascinating, Sue, what you're talking about, because again, You know, like when we talk about with some of the old line restaurants here in New Orleans that, you know, dishes have crossed over where people, you know, it may be like Oysters Rockefeller, right? You don't just find it at Arno's. You can find it at other places and things. And but people would take it and maybe adapt it or tweak it to make it their own. And like a lot of cocktails, it's fascinating to read your book because, you know, when we, and we'll talk about this after we take a break and come back for the next segment, you know, the variations may seem subtle to the average person, but there's a distinct change of flavor, like if you're using curacao in there or not, or how many, I was interested to read how many cloves people use because cloves are powerful.
Yes.
And that's going to change the flavor profile of the drink.
Yes. And some, you know, again, you know, sugar. I mean, yeah. I know some waiters, you know, will sit there and put a ton of sugar in. I'm not big on that being sweet. I usually have to tell the waiter to, like, cut on the sugar.
Yeah.
I'm more of, like, the spice and the flavors. But some people really like it sweet. I mean, we are in the land of sweet iced tea. So, yeah, sweet tea.
Absolutely, right. The 2-to-1 simple syrup. It's everywhere, friends. You know what I'm talking about if you know what I'm talking about. Let's do this. We're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're chatting with Sue Strachan, who is the author of the Cafe Brulo. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. I think we're going to go down and get ourselves a proper Cafe Brulo demo here at Arno's, and you can check some of that stuff out on the website, friendsnoladrinks.com. Come on back. Hi, Brian Diaz, host of the NOLA Drink Show here. Check out Nitty Grits Podcasts, a growing network of food, drink, and culture shows. Visit southernfood.org for more. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. As always, happy to have you here and super happy to be here at Arno's, one of the Grand Dame restaurants here in New Orleans in the French Quarter, chatting with Sue Strachan, who has authored the fabulous book, The Cafe Brulo. We've been talking about the cocktail. Now, we just took a little pause, Sue, because we went downstairs and Augie, who's the maitre d' here and has been the maitre d' here for a good number of years, gave us the proper demo of how they make the brulo, which was awesome. You can go to our website. We'll have some imagery. I don't know off the top of my head how it's going to look exactly, but we'll have probably a little video and definitely some still photos and stuff so you see how they do it here. But what a great presentation.
He's wonderful at the presentation. And, you know, as you will see, he does the orange, the flames going down the orange peel. It follows the orange peels.
It's amazing.
And, you know, it's almost like at one point, because I was standing back a little bit, that it was absolutely almost like cupping the flames in a weird way.
Yeah.
Again, you know, viewers, if you go on the website or your Instagram, that you'll probably see, hopefully, I was taking pictures while you were videoing, that hopefully that somewhere along the line you all can see that. But I thought that was, I had never noticed that before. And I was like, that just is really cool. So, I mean, it's, you know, half the fun of this drink is the presentation.
Right.
Yeah.
And we definitely stand on circumstance here in New Orleans, I think. And so this is one of those ones where, I mean, it's a lovely drink. So not giving that short shrift whatsoever. But the presentation is where it's at. And one of the things I like when you say in your book, you're talking about, I think you cite Dale DeGroff, who's an acquaintance of mine and, you know, king of cocktails there, Dale. And, you know, it's definitely one of those drinks where if you're going to make one at home, I like what you said in the book, go watch some instructional videos first. We are talking about handling open flame.
Yes, yes. You know, Dale DeGroff has a really good one on YouTube. And that's the one I'd go to be honest. They do have other ones, I think, if my memory is serving me correctly, that there is someone serving it at Arno's. But, yeah, I recommend, you know, before you even, like, if you've never sampled Cafe Brulo, I've never seen it made, highly recommend before you even try making it to go to one of the old line restaurants that makes it. And again, Tarita, maybe Antoine's, Arnaud's, Brennan's. No, Brennan's doesn't make it anymore. Broussard's, Commander's Palace, and Galatoire's.
Right.
So, you know, and it's a good excuse to go out to dinner at one of these old line restaurants.
Or all of them, right?
Or all of them.
Absolutely. Well, let's, and we don't have to go into too much detail here, Sue, but let's talk about some of the variations that we get with the drink. Because you and I think we touched on this before we took a break. I'm sorry, I'm a little scatterbrained because I went and watched Open Flame in this wonderful demonstration that Augie just gave us. So, you know, we it's made with coffee here. We talked about how it's Antoine's that uses chicory coffee. Is that
no,
right?
No. It's Arnaud's that use coffee. Oh, okay. It's coffee and chicory, and everyone else uses a French dark roast.
Gotcha. Yes, Thank you for straightening that out. And so, what are some of the other variations? Like we were talking about clove. I noticed that there was a pretty significant difference in the amount of cloves that people use. But we want to use whole clove, right?
You want to use whole cloves. You don't want to break it up. And again, it's the same thing with cinnamon. You want to use the cinnamon rolls. Some say cinnamon sticks, but cinnamon rolls. You don't want to use powdered cinnamon in any way, shape, or form. Interestingly enough, the Brennan's recipe, instead of using, I guess, granulated sugar, they use sugar cubes. And then also in the book, there's a recipe from Brennan's which used to serve, and I know Antoine's used to many years ago serve an orange brulot, in which they make the brulot. It's an individual brulot that's served in the orange cup, which is like
the orange itself.
The orange itself, which is really interesting as well. And you also see the recipe in this book, Creole Cookbook by Lefcadio Hearn from the late 19th century. And he did not use orange liqueur in it. He used Kirschwasser instead. So everyone has crazy variations to what is a brulot. Now also you have families. It's also a big tradition in New Orleans families to make brulot for Christmas. And when this book came out and people started buying it, and I was getting pictures from friends showing me their family who makes it. And
wow.
I was doing some research, and back in the mid 20th century, and I've been told they still do it, is ladies who make it for luncheons, and it was a thing for them to do. In fact, Edith Stern, who was the one who, if her husband Edgar Stern, built Longview House and Gardens, she was in a magazine article in Life magazine, and she said that was the only thing she knew how to make.
Interesting.
Yes.
Wow, that's really interesting.
In the book. I found that out after.
Because I'm I didn't know that. And I read the book.
No, that's the other thing. That's a bad thing when the book comes out, because then people are like, oh, did you know this? And I'm going, no, I wish I did. But, I'm writing a story in a pandemic, and if there's a revised version, second edition, that's going in.
You start compiling second edition stuff, and that necessitates a second edition.
Exactly.
Right. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit, too, about, we got a few minutes left before we close out the portion of the radio show. We're going to continue the conversation with you on another Shot with Nola Drinks, our podcast-only segment. The presentation, aside from the flame and all that really cool stuff that we saw, the cups are really cool, and so we have our, it's called many people call it the Café Brûlot Diabolique. Mm-hmm. And so the devil's
in the devil's brew.
The devil's brew. Devil's flaming brew,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so we have this like very particular glass here, and we'll put some pictures up on the gram and stuff. But it's a really interesting story about the serving vessels.
Well, Jules Alcitor is credited with the design, and it's a variation on a demi-tasse cup. And you can also have this make this in a demi-tasse cup. And, demi-tasse is, sort of a longer, more of a vertically shaped cup with a handle on it. Because remember, it is still a hot drink at the end of the day, and it's sort of a nice, delicate after-dinner kind of look to it. The Devil was based on Goethe's Faust.
Yeah, okay.
The German, and that character Faust was a German Renaissance.
So you know it's
character.
Very bright and uplifting.
Yes, it's exactly. I know, yeah, like heavy, heavy, deep meaning to this cup. But we got a great devil out of it. But I also linked it to, if you look at old advertisements from the late 19th century, anything that had sort of devil or is devilish or had this kind of stylized devil on it. So it's sort of again, no true origin. Where who knows how Jules decided on
marketing?
He's a great marketing guy. How he decided on the image. I don't, who drew the original image, and so I think pulled from different resources. and the cups were made, and sometimes you'll see a devil on the saucer as well. If you can't get these, you can find these online on eBay, and also cocktailkingdom.com.
Cocktail Kingdom, yeah.
Where you also can get a full Brulo set. They're very hard to find. You can go and, you know, can search for them. But if you want to do the easiest way, cocktailkingdom.com has the full set to buy.
You'll pay a pretty penny for the antiques.
You will. It just, you know, depends. I know, you know, some people love this, the hunt. I know some people who, you know, collect Cafe Brulo cups. Again, I got pictures of those, too, of their collections, which was a lot of fun. So that's, like, the great thing about the demonstration. Then also the Demitasse gloves cups, which you had brought up earlier in a separate conversation, not on air, was I went to Lucullus Antiques and talked to Kerry Moody, and he had Demitasse cups where he was showing me when you flip the Demitasse cup over when you're done with whatever you're drinking, they can put a little dash of whatever digestif you want, such as a Calvados.
Like a cognac or Calvados or Armagnac or any of those by itself. You know,
yes, and in that little like indentation in the cup, which I thought was really interesting too. I mean, I guess your coffee and liqueur is topped by another, you know, liqueur is a digestif, so...
I love that. Lean over the table because you don't want to drip coffee on your fine wares that your clothing that you're wearing.
Yes, yes.
Well, let's do this. So you're going to stick around for another shot with Nola Drinks, our podcast only segment. Got about a minute left before we close out the portion of the radio show. Tell people where we can find your terrific book and connect with you.
All right. In New Orleans, you can find it at Garden District Books, Octavia Books. And then you can also purchase it at LSU Press
Southern
website.
Food and Beverage Museum. I'm going to throw that one out there, too.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. Thank you. God, they were so generous.
No worries.
You know, and I love them. They were so generous. They also let me go into their little library that they have. That's so fabulous. Their culinary library to do research. And then you know, you can get it at Amazon. For our listeners that don't live in New Orleans, you can do LSU Press or Amazon.
Awesome. Fantastic. Sue, thank you very much. You're going to stick around for another shot with Nola Drinks. But if you are listening on the radio, friends, go to noladrinks.com, get the podcast. We're going to chat a little bit more with Sue and learn a little bit more about her background. I think we'll ask her some questions. We touched on this at the beginning of the show as to, you know, why take on the challenge of writing a cocktail book and history book. We'll touch on some other things, friends. But again, if you are listening on the radio, I do appreciate it. Remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all. Everybody, hey, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Nola Drinks. We are about to bounce right back over to Arno's and continue our conversation with Sue Strachan, author of the Cafe Brulo. Once again, special shout out to Arno's for hosting us. What a great afternoon and early evening that was. Here we go. All right, everybody. Yep, another shot. Little drinks. Thanks for sticking around. Happy to have you here, friends. We're chatting with Sue Strachan, who is the author of the fabulous book, Cafe Brulo. We're here at Arno's. Once again, I want to give special thanks to Katie and Augie and everybody. And my friend Christoph, who runs the bar here, special shout out to that guy. I think after we're done taping here, Sue, I'm going to go down and have a drink with Christoph because the man knows how to make a drink. And he's running the French 75 bar, the famed beard award-winning bar here in Arno's on Bienville in the French Quarter of New Orleans. If you've never been to New Orleans or you've never been to Arno's, check that off your list. This is one of the most famous restaurants in the world, and you need to come eat here. Get a Cafe Brulo, I think.
Yes,
have a fine meal and then have a Cafe Brulo.
There's no other way to end a meal in New Orleans, in my opinion. Is you have to have a Cafe Brulo at least, and then one of the old line restaurants that the city is famous for.
Absolutely, and Arno's is firmly ensconced in that definition as the Grand Dame or old line restaurant here. So do me a favor. We touched on this in the first segment a little bit, and I asked you. I think we kind of sort of started to jump right into the Cafe Brulo and writing the book, but we know, and like you touch on some of this in your book, the history of the term cocktail. And as I said, we're not going to talk about it too much because we've talked about it with Dave Wondrich and people like that who've been on the show before, and that's sort of a murky past. But any time that you go to uncover something like this, and especially when we're talking about a decades-old drink, it's a challenge. And what made you want to take the challenge? I know you mentioned like LSU Press was doing thing and doing their thing and then looking for the sort of the second cocktail, but that's a Herculean task. So what made you want to do it?
I am originally not from New Orleans. I'm from Connecticut, and I moved here originally for college, went and worked in New York for a couple of years, and then I moved back here. And so, I've been here for 25 plus years, and I really love, obviously I have to love, but I don't have to. I love New Orleans and have done a lot of cultural writing in the city. And so when I think it's part of a job as a writer in the city and who's been covering the cultural scene, much like what you're doing as well, is to provide sort of a history and context for things that make this city so special. And when I was doing the research, I always kept that in mind. I didn't take everything, I didn't take the Jean Lafitte story at face value. I was like, this can't be true. As you said, jokingly said, anything with Jean Lafitte, you kind of, it's got a side eye with. Yeah. So I kept on digging and kind of talking to people and, what they heard. The whole thing about the Brulo and Armagnac in France was through conversations with other writers in the city, food writers in the city, drinks and food writers in the city, including Wayne Curtis, Poppy Tooker, Liz Williams over at SoFab, and then Kimberly Charles, who I haven't mentioned yet, who runs a PR company who promotes liquor. And she was the final link into the lane in the chain to connect me with Amanda Garmham, who represents Armagnac in France. And, I sort of think to myself, I was really scared. I'm like, what happens if I didn't find that? I mean, if you've read the book, there's a whole, it's important to the whole part of how it kind of ended up here. And its origins in France, or the Brulo mixture is in France and still happens there. I'm hoping to get to France sometime in the near future and actually see one of the Brulo the Armagnac distillation and sample one of their Brulos.
After they do the harvest.
And the first distillation. And in the book it says they all do their own different recipes, much like the Cafe Brulos are done in New Orleans.
It's amazing. So tell us a little bit about your background, Sue. So were you, you've been in New Orleans for 25 years, as you said. Were you always a cocktail head, or did you kind of get into it being here in New Orleans? So what is your connection to wanting to write a book about a cocktail? And then tell us, because, you do other writing and you do other stuff.
Yeah, right now I'm working for this company, Benzinga, which is a financial media company, which is kind of like the flip side of writing about cocktails.
Hey, if you're writing about that, you got a drink.
Yeah. Especially what the market is like now. Let me tell you need a cocktail. we're all laughing. Everyone's laughing. don't look at your accounts right now, everyone. So, I think I took on the task because it's interesting. I originally was a history major, switched to English during college. So, anything that's researching and researches history, I sort of jump on. And I think the interesting thing about this for me was that I knew there was a bigger story to it. And the digging was part of the fun. Talking to people, especially during the pandemic, was sort of a nice lifeline. And going to different restaurants like Arno's was very nice, all masks of course, but they let me, I think it was Augie actually who did the demo for me about more a year ago. Antoine's, Charles Carter, they again masks, all protocols, but he was the one who did the sampling. Same thing with Galtois. When I talked to Melvin Rodriguez, he let me sample all the different orange liqueurs, again, COVID protocols. So it was always, in some ways, like also a good excuse to get out of the house.
Right, right.
And talk to people. And but I think, you know, to me, I'm a history buff, and I loved doing the research, and it wasn't a struggle for me. It was actually a lot of fun. And I also want to do a shout out to Ned Amard, who is a historian who has a wonderful site through the New Orleans Bar Association. He's an attorney, but he also does his historical articles through that. And I recommend that for anyone who wants to learn more about New Orleans history. And he's a great writer, too.
Yeah. So what got you in? So history major, English major. So that checks the writing box, obviously. Where'd you go to school?
I went to Newcomb College at Tulane University.
Okay.
But I think you're going back to the question about cocktails. We joked about, like, we drink what our parents drink. And my parents were vodka drinkers. And it's what you end up drinking, what you could sneak out of your parents' liquor cabinet when you're in high school. I'm not recommending that.
Yeah. I won't tell stories about refilling clear liquid or brown liquid.
Never did that. So I actually was strictly like a vodka tonic or a screwdriver. I don't know why I drank screwdrivers. It was a thing.
Yeah.
I did Mount Gay rum and tonic for a while.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And but switched back to, and I was doing vodka tonic, but I stopped doing it because I got tired of trying to get my drink order again, because tonic, it's useless to get tonic in restaurants, especially if they use the whatever you call it.
The gun. Yeah.
The gun.
Yeah.
Because it sits in the hose and it loses its fizziness.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're getting a bottle that you know, it opens right there, you're not getting the fizziness. So then I switched to vodka on the rocks. But then I'm always was interested in trying cocktails. And so I'm now onto an old fashioned kick. I did an article about 2 years ago about, you know, old fashions, which is another one that has so many different variations.
Absolutely.
I compared the one at Cure, wonderful craft cocktail bar in New Orleans, to the one at Clancy's, which, you know, is a great restaurant, but it has a fabulous bartender named Garth Swanson.
Yeah,
so
he
made one too. And they're like, you know, opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yep.
The Cure one, I think, is more of the classic original old fashioned, whereas the Clancy's one is more of like the 1950s style.
Where we got the muddled fruit. The maraschino cherry and all that. And it's one of those drinks that it's like a Sazerac, right? So it's actually it's a deceptively simple drink in a sense. But so you can't vary it too much, and then you're outside the bounds of what is an old fashioned.
Mm-hmm. Great.
But within those sidelines, you're actually able to play with it quite a bit. So to me, it's the ratio of simple syrup. Do you make a 1-to-1 sugar to water simple syrup, or 2-to-1, which you can make the case for 2-to-1 because it creates viscosity in the drink, which is really nice. But I don't like sweet as much, so I like to back that down. This is a little, listeners have probably heard me say this before. One of my favorite things to do is actually split the base, as we say. So half rye and half whiskey, or half rye and half bourbon.
I haven't tried that.
Yeah, that's a good one. So then you kind of get that baking spice of the rye, but it's not too much.
Yeah.
And then just like a solid bourbon, like Forrester or something like that, does really well in that drink. And I don't need the muddled fruit in there personally. Just a large ice cube that kind of slowly melts and waters the drink down a little bit over time. Barrel proof is one of my very favorite old fashions. Now, it's hard to get. Sorry, I'm rambling, but it's hard to get because one of the things that they used to do for their happy hour old fashioned is they use the old granddad bonded 100 proof bonded whiskey, and it's very difficult to get your hands on now with all the shortages that are going on. But there was something about their right simple syrup use, no muddled fruit, large ice cube, old granddad bonded, and they do it like $5 happy hour old fashioned, and it's just spot on.
Well, I have never had that, so I'm going to have to pay a visit to Barrel Proof.
And they're back to doing it. I'll give a shout-out to my friend Liam Deegan, who runs that bar, owns that bar, who's getting married out here pretty quick.
Congratulations, Liam.
Yeah, and Jillian, his lovely fiancé and wife. Absolutely. They're back to doing the happy hour now that we're sort of in a semi-post-COVID
world. What
hour?
Do we know what the hours are?
They open at 4, and I think their happy hour goes till 7.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a nice, long happy hour.
Yeah, and I'm going to give you a really scary thing. 1201 Magazine Street, because I know the address, Sue.
I I'm familiar. I, you know, I've been to Barrel Proof. I knew I was familiar with it through the when it was the Bridge Lounge.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I don't need an address, but
that, yeah, you know exactly where it is. I call it the lower Garden District.
Yeah, exactly.
Is what I like to say. The LLGD.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Well, awesome. Well, Sue, thank you so much today for spending some time with us. And tell us one more time where we can connect with you and where we can find the fabulous book, The Cafe Brulo.
Well, I do have a website, suestracken.com, and you want to check out...
Spell that for us, Sue.
I will. suestracan.com. And you can buy the book at Southern Food and Beverage Museum, or as we like to say, SOFAB.
Yep, southernfood.org. Go check
and,
that out.
And Octavia Books and Garden District Books. And that's local in New Orleans. And then if you're not living here, you can do Amazon or LSU Press's website.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. And we'll have you on again. Are you going to tackle another one of these sometime soon,
I don't know. I think I'm going to be running into the head of LC Press next week at the Tennessee Williams Festival. So I may do a pitch then to her.
I think we've got about 6 or 7 clearly original New Orleans cocktails that have not been unearthed yet in this treatment.
I'm ready for it. I'm ready to write some more.
Awesome. We're ready to read it. Sue, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a joy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Friends, brief musical interlude, and I'll be back to close things out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show, friends. Happy to have had you here this week. As always, yeah, you know that. Thanks to Sue. Really fun conversation. It's a terrific book. Go grab it. If you're here in the New Orleans area, go check out one of the brick and mortar bookshops that we mentioned. I do know that the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, one of my favorite places, as you know, has copies of it. So you can wander in there into their gift shop right there in the front. Don't even have to pay to go into the museum if you don't have time. But hey, pay and go into the museum if you do have time. It's terrific. If you've never visited, you can check out southernfood.org. That's also where you'll find this show and several other fantastic shows on the Nitty Grits podcast, which is of course, the podcast network of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum and the National Food and Beverage Foundation. Special thanks once again to Arno's, to Augie for giving us the Cafe Brulo demonstration. You can check out some of that stuff. We got it going online, as well as thanks to Katie, who's one of the owners, and Christoph, who runs the French 75 bar. It's just always fun to hang out in Arno's. It's always fun to hang out in the historic generational restaurants that we're so lucky to have here in New Orleans. It's really, you know, it's part of the fabric of what we do. I've talked about this before on the show. You know, the business model here is very different than it is in a lot of places, and certainly there are plenty of exceptions. But so what's so important to the restaurant scene in New Orleans is these traditional, historical, generational restaurants that have been here for decades, in many cases, well over 100 years. And it's just a bedrock of what it is that we do in the culinary scene. Sure, we got contemporary stuff. Sure, unfortunately, we're doing some of the churn and burn stuff, meaning the plan is to open the restaurant for 3 to 5 years and then shut it down, like stuff that we see in a lot of other places. But places like that are so special, and they drive so much of the culinary ship here in this part of the world. Now, there's a whole host of other things attached to that. It's not just these, you know, half a dozen or so-called grand dame restaurants that make everything happen. This is a topic for another time entirely, but getting back to it, it's really cool to hang out in some of these spaces. And after the show is over, shout out to my friend Christoph, who runs the bar, French 75, the famous bar there in Arno's, and had a couple drinks, and it was good to catch up with him because I hadn't really seen him much since before the pandemic. And it's just really cool. Met some cool people in there. Had some good drinks. Was really a lot of fun. Friends, I want to mention something. I mentioned this last week on the last program. I hope that everybody came out from the storms again okay this time. Obviously, last week was a rough go for folks in St. Bernard Parish in New Orleans East. If you are interested in donating and assisting, I always recommend to check out Second Harvest Food Bank. It's a really wonderful organization that does stuff around this area year-round. And of course, they are supporting those that were affected by the tornadoes. Oh yeah, we got those now too, last week. Just go to no-hunger.org. Once again, no-hunger.org. They do terrific work. They did terrific work during the pandemic. They do terrific work during hurricane relief situations. And once again, they are stepping up to assist those who were affected by the tornadoes last week. Again, no-hunger.org, Second Harvest Food Bank. Check them out. We're going to be chatting next week with Bart Watson, Chief Economist for the Brewers Association. Always look forward to having him on. Talked about that at the top of the show. Oh, I mentioned Bourbon Fest. Yeah, I survived Bourbon Fest, barely. It was really a lot of fun. It came off pretty well for the most part. Never want to see how the sausage is made, as I like to say to people. But I was so busy doing all kinds of things, making the festival work, as were my fellow board members and staff members and wonderful volunteers. Shout out and special thanks to all the volunteers at Bourbon Fest for making it tick. I did not get a chance to record even one damn segment for the show. So what we're going to be doing, I had promised, I was hoping just, you know, behind the scenes, I'll let you know. I was hoping to get maybe one entire show with a bunch of segments put together, maybe two shows out of the whole thing. And it just didn't work out that way. So I'm going to be trying to put together some programming based around folks who were at Bourbon Fest presenting and things like that in the coming weeks. We'll do this over Zoom, or if folks are around here, we'll do something around here, and be on the lookout for that. But again, next week will be actually a planned week off next week, I should say, in the next show. Will be Bart Watson, as I mentioned, from the Brewers Association, and we're cooking up a whole bunch of other good stuff coming down the pike for you on the NOLA Drink Show as well. So friends, be good out there. Take care of each other, huh? And go support Second Harvest Food Bank. Sometime you may need them, and they're out there helping people when they really need help. No-hunger.org. That's it. Here's to you.